The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome to another edition of Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. With me on the line, my friend Dave Zanotti from the Public Square. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be with you as always.
Well, it is a joy to hear your voice, and this has been a really crazy time right now for really all of us in Florida. We've been watching and waiting, and yesterday the court dropped the announcement, as was expected, on April 1. Sadly, it's not an April Fool's joke. It appears to be true reality that we are going to be facing a ballot amendment proposition on our November ballot that deals with basically codifying abortion into the state constitution. And that's something I know you've worked on hard in Ohio and also here in Florida, trying to educate people. That was a big decision that the Supreme Court handed down, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is, Mike. And we've been involved in public policy for 44 years. And the question of the integrity of human life, the preservation and the sanctity of life, has been the most important issue to us for 44 years. And so we have been working on this issue across the country wherever we've had an opportunity. Sometimes the progress has been wonderful, and sometimes the progress has not been progress at all, but it's been total failure. And that was prior to Roe falling as well as after Roe has fallen. So we've seen a lot. We've seen the good and we've seen the bad. We've seen some wonderful victories and some wonderful, like, for example, let's just talk about the rise of crisis pregnancy centers and the effectiveness of ultrasounds in America and the number of lives that have been saved, both under the wall of Roe as well as post-Roe. There are many things that we can be encouraged by, but right now, the question of life in this culture is on the ropes. We are in a very difficult time, and Florida now is the epicenter. And to be honest with you, Mike, we have an office here in Florida, and I spend a lot of time here. I'm not encouraged that the pro-life community in Florida really understands how dire this moment is and how profoundly the enemy is marshaling against life in the state of Florida.
Wouldn't you say that very same thing happened in Ohio?
Yeah, Ohio got caught by surprise, and unfortunately, the pro-life forces there made a tragic mistake in getting involved in a technical fight in an off-off election year with a constitutional amendment just 60 days before they'd be faced with an amendment that would then take on the question of abortion with the pro-aborts and Planned Parenthood on the offense. They split their forces. They split their revenue. They confused the voters. In August, they were telling people to vote no or to vote yes on issue one. And in September, they started telling them to vote no on issue one. And it was a treacherous situation in an off-off election year. You could write a book on that one. We'll be able to write a book on this one that's coming up in Florida. In some ways, they are completely different, amazingly different. Oh, yes, they're completely different fights. The elements that created the outcomes, where you have an off-off election year versus a major election year. For example, a detailed analysis of what happened in Ohio in 2023, again, an off-off election year, which is a dramatic turnout change. It reveals that when you compare the Trump victory in 2020 versus the defeat of the passage of issue one, which was the pro-abortion amendment in 2023, in those 3 years, you can clearly see that the reason that the abortion measure was not defeated, the pro-abortion measure, the Planned Parenthood issue one in Ohio, was not defeated last year in November, was because the Trump votes stayed away from it. They stayed home. They weren't there. Mm-hmm. It was a turnout question. It was the only issue on the ballot in an off-off election year, and the Trump vote, you can trace in every major county, the Trump vote wasn't there. They didn't come out and vote.
Now, I remember that the total vote for that thing was shockingly low, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. And that's what happens in an off election year. So the first thing you don't want to do is to get caught in that situation. So there was tactical, strategic, and certainly financial mistakes that were made in the Ohio campaign. It makes it again. That's its whole book. And that's a significant loss. And we'll never recover from that loss, to be honest with you. We may overcome that amendment eventually by God's grace. I believe that we will if we don't give up. But we won't overcome that loss, and the lessons that have to be learned there are serious, and they're hard, and they're painful. It's like that's something you'll never be able to laugh about. It was a tragic, tragic loss. The biggest underestimation was how much the Planned Parenthood abortion community and Big Pharma combined wanted to win that key Midwestern state. Now, they spent almost $50 million. In fact, I think I heard yesterday it was now up to $58 million to accomplish that in 2023. Mike, what we're facing in Florida right now, we would anticipate will top $200 million spent by the pro-abortion industry, Big Pharma, and their allies to win Florida for abortion. This is the number one prize in America. Ohio was the launching ground. They believe that if they win Florida, they will end the debate over abortion in America for good.
And there's a chance that that would be right if they do. And, you know, the whole thing I know that is so important is for people to be aware. Number one, you mentioned going to the polls. Obviously, that's always an issue. We need to vote. We need to exercise the right that we've been given to vote. It's a privilege, but it's also our right to vote. And it's a shame when we don't. But then there's this other thing, Dave, that they're just sneaky on how they present this thing to a lot of people. And I'm convinced that a lot of people who are voting for these things across the board, they don't realize what they're voting for. They don't know the whole game.
I think that's abundantly clear, Mike, and that's partially a problem of money, and it's partially an issue of cowardice, because there are people who are afraid to talk about this now. So let's start with the actual. Well, let me put it to you this way: the question we've got to ask is simply this: how can a single sentence resolve an issue as complicated as abortion in America? How can a single sentence solve this problem? What the pro-abortion community, what Planned Parenthood and their allies are telling us in Florida now, is that one sentence solves everything. And let me read the one sentence to you. Except as provided in Section 10, Section 22, no law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability, or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's health care provider. No law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's health care provider. That's it. One sentence,
yeah.
Fits all, forever, amen. And this goes in the Florida Constitution. Now, Mike, even a casual reading causes you to stop and say, wait a second, there's got to be more to this issue than that. Now, what's that except as provided thing? Well, that's the fact that Florida has a provision in the Constitution regarding a parental notification, and it's constitutional language. So it exempts this amendment from canceling out that amendment. That's a shaky legal premise in and of itself, but let's let that one pass. No law. Those two words tell us that the General Assembly, the legislature, the Florida legislature cannot pass any law. It takes away our right to representation in the legislative process. No law shall prohibit, right? The word prohibit is not defined, penalized, not defined, delay, not defined, or restrict abortion. You shall not prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict. What's left? They basically are trying to surround abortion with four walls of protection that say you can't prohibit abortion, you can't penalize abortion, you can't delay abortion, you can't restrict abortion before viability. Well, what's viability? It's not defined. That issue alone in the medical community is up for grabs, and science is backing viability up every day. into younger and younger ages for the unborn child. So you can't penalize, prohibit, delay, or restrict abortion before viability, or, big deal, or. What that means, it cancels what's about to come. Or, when necessary to protect the patient's health, not defined, could be any matter relating to health, as determined by whom? The patient's health care provider.
Yeah.
And Mike, that's not a doctor. Doesn't have to be. Not defined.
Yeah.
How can one sentence resolve all of these conflicts? The fact is that it can't. That's why it doesn't belong in the Constitution. It belongs in statute. That's how we're ultimately going to resolve this thing. This language is a piece of junk.
It really is. It's deceptive. It is really putting all of the weight for this thing on that medical provider. So it doesn't really mean that that's a doctor acting in good interest. It could be just the abortion provider or the pharma company that's sending out the abortion pill or whatever. I mean, exactly. It's just an ambiguous figure right there.
Mike, you see these commercials on television for these healthcare providers to send you drugs. All you've got to do is log on and talk to them. It's any of those things. It's any of those things. So it is a tremendously shoddy piece of legal presentation. It's awful. It's awful. And it should be rejected out of hand. But here's the other part of the story. For years, pro-life lawyers have been doing a good job in attempting to challenge the idea that the Supreme Court in Florida has held that the privacy clause of the state constitution covers abortion. Well, just like the Roe versus Wade stitchery of 50 years of mythology at the federal level fell, also on April 1st, that notion that privacy means abortion in the Florida Constitution also fell. That's a gain for the legal integrity of the pro-life argument. That's a gain. Here's the problem with that. It caused a trigger to go into effect, which the Florida legislature had passed, that if that provision were to fall, then the 6-week ban on abortion would become the law of Florida. It was a trigger mechanism. When one fell, then the law immediately went into effect. Now, that move gave Planned Parenthood the right to go across the nation in media last night, crowing out loud about a binary choice between a 6-week ban, which is the most extremist, restrictive thing in the world that you can't let happen, or our proviso, our one sentence, which will make 6-week bans go away forever. They just turned this into a binary election between the extremist 6-week ban and an enshrining Roe versus Wade. They were just handed a platform upon which to run a binary election.
Well, now we were hearing all about this 6-week thing, and you know, you typed that as part of the trigger that was going to happen when this decision came. So basically what I'm hearing you say, the Supreme Court kind of punted on the 6-week ban thing over the privacy issue. So that is now being deferred. If I'm understanding you right, it's being deferred along with this amendment choice.
Well, no, what's happened is the 6-week ban is automatically now in effect because the ban in and of the 6-week law contained a trigger mechanism. So when the court ruled on the privacy question, they immediately the consequence of that put the 6-week into effect. So it's two different bodies of government, one doing its job and then the other instantly then moving in because it was set up that way. The law was set up that way. This is one of the problems with trigger laws is it. Let's say it this way. When the legislature passed the 6-week ban, and it was about a year ago, the idea of a 6-week ban was not in question the way it is today, a year later. Today, it's perceived as perhaps the less desirable way to approach abortion, largely because Donald Trump came out and condemned the 6-week ban in Florida and chastised Ron DeSantis for doing it. So the politics changed over a year. The trigger didn't change. The law didn't change. When the court did what it did, the trigger came in exactly as the legislature set it up. And now instead of a celebration about the 6-week ban, there's sort of a silence.
Yeah, you're not hearing a lot about it, that's for sure. And this is so tragic when we think about the fact that DeSantis, who signed that bill that never quite made it into law, the six-week ban, because they were waiting on this judgment. Now you have a situation where when you look at the vote, which was 4-3, so it narrowly made it to the ballot. But what's sad to me, as I understand it, Dave, is that the person writing the majority opinion was one of DeSantis's appointees.
Yeah, and here's the challenge about this. The issue of bringing the abortion amendment to the ballot is nowhere near as complicated as the decision that they had to make on the privacy question. So in essence, they made it, I don't know that they thought of it as a trade, but they did some of each. They made the right decision on the privacy question, and that's a pro-life victory. I think they made the wrong decision on bringing this measure to the ballot because, as we just discussed, in a single sentence, none of these words are defined. They're just not defined. It's such a lousy piece of law. Now, their response to that is, hey, you're not stupid. You figured it out. So will everybody else. Go out there, spend the money, and win your case. Okay. All right. So we can take that rebuke. And we can move forward knowing that's what we have to do. And we do have to do this, Mike, because this is a real mess of a law. I mean, here's the irony. When they went to the Ohio law, they created a very expansive law. They put together their wish list. It was multiple paragraphs, and it touched on all of reproductive decisions, they called it. It included the question of the transgender issues. It included all kinds of stuff. This one's a single sentence. But basically what it does is it enshrines Roe versus Wade, but it actually a more poisoned version of Roe versus Wade.
That was going to be one of my questions to you. It would be which of the two, if this one sadly becomes reality, and we hope it doesn't, but if it were to do that, which would be then the worst case scenario? And I'm betting the latter, right? It's over more serious than what we had under Roe v. Wade.
Oh, it's much worse than Roe versus Wade because none of the terms are defined at all. And again, because Florida is a 60% supermajority state, and that's a whole nother political piece of this. I know we're going to get to a break soon, so I'll save that for our next segment. But yes, this is worse than Roe versus Wade by far because the world has changed since the wall of Roe was built 50 years ago. Now, when you use the term patient's health care provided, you're talking about chemical abortions through telemedicine, as we talked earlier, in the internet. And 63% of abortions are now being done by chemicals. The world has changed. This is worse than Roe.
Yeah, it certainly is. My guest today, Dave Zanotti from the Public Square, the American Policy Roundtable, heard daily here on The Shepherd. And we'll be back talking about this most important decision that was handed down to allow this thing to go on to the ballot this November. This amendment that would basically codify abortion into the state constitution. We'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike.
If you're a Christian business person and you want to meet people who want to do business with you, you need to join the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because the mission of the Christian Chamber is to build kingdom, business, and community. And it all starts with the Christian principle of building relationships. To learn more about the Christian Chamber and all the different ways you can get engaged with hundreds of other Central Florida Christian business people, visit cfchristianchamber.com or call 407-258-3578.
On the line with my friend Dave Zanotti from the Public Square, heard every day here on The Shepherd Radio across our network. That would be Orlando and Gainesville and Ocala and the Villages. And we're all abuzz. It was on all of the stations yesterday. There was a lot of reporting about it. The Supreme Court handing down an approval that the language was approved to go on to the state ballot for November in a presidential election year. This is not like an off year. So, Dave, do you see the fact that this one, unlike the one in Ohio, this one's going on the ballot in a presidential year? Is that going to be a good thing or a bad thing for the chances of this thing getting passed?
Well, it's such a fascinating experiment in the process of voting that if the stakes weren't so high, it would almost be an enjoyable conversation to ask some of the questions that we're going to see as the states of as laboratories and how they differ in the way that they do elections and the timing and all that stuff. But this is so deadly a situation, Mike, if people feel a sense of lament in what I'm saying, it's because this is really, really scary stuff. Let me give you just one example. What we learned in the Ohio race was, in Ohio, there were also two amendments that came out, abortion and marijuana. What we discovered in analyzing the details of that election is a vote for abortion was a vote for marijuana. A vote for marijuana was a vote for abortion. So you have two drivers of two separate communities driving voters to the polls to, in essence, get what they want. That is a high turnout motivating factor. In addition to that, Florida is a 60% supermajority state, which means that the pro-abortion community has an incentive they've never had anywhere else before. If they can win in Florida, they can prove that DeSantis was wrong. They can bury DeSantis in that regard. They can bury the governor for backing this bill and applauding it. They can prove that they can win even in a 60% supermajority state with the most radical single sentence that recodifies and enshrines Roe plus, plus, plus. And they will basically make a statement to the world that if we could win in Florida, a red state, DeSantis' state, with a 60% supermajority, the question of abortion is over in America. It's over. It's done. That's what's at stake. That's why you're going to see, I think, upwards of $200 million invested, because this is their whole future.
Mm-hmm. Now, something similar that I think a lot of people, it's in the negative direction. To that degree, it's similar, would be the betting thing. What is now, you hear it on the news, you hear it on commercials, the Hard Rock Bet, as it is called. It's sponsoring some of the station's day parts. It's everywhere. And yet just a couple of years ago, it wasn't a thing at all. And now it's everywhere. And that's kind of in the same direction of a vote that was gone. And it looked innocuous to some people, thinking that, well, this is only with those that are part of the Native American tribal thing. But yet we've seen that the scope of that went far beyond South Florida on a reservation. It went all the way to the big media here in Florida, where to the point that anyone can vote now or bet on anything at all, just about, especially with sports betting. I mean, that's kind of in that same scary scenario of outcome. Wouldn't you think so?
Well, for two reasons. One is that the gambling industry and the abortion industry have a common goal. They want their product as conveniently delivered as possible anywhere at all times. Now, that's so yes, they will spend any amount of money because they're investing in their future to get it. Where things differ, but even again, making the point even more interesting, is that the gambling industry, they were also illegal until a few years ago. Now we have a situation where the abortion industry is fighting for their very legal life. This is a desperate situation for them. If they can win Florida, they will have abortion anywhere for any reason whatsoever in Florida, and they will turn Florida into the abortion trafficking capital of the Southeast. Because many of the states within driving distance of Florida have abortion bans at some level. They will turn Florida into a complete abortion-free zone, which means they will be able to make this the center of abortion in the Southeastern United States. The motivation on their part is huge, and it's something that we've got to recognize. Now, again, it doesn't mean that defeat for the pro-life forces is inevitable. But what it means is we have to recognize this is a historic moment. I personally believe that when people understand the ramification of this language, they would reject it and say, we can do better than this. Maybe they don't like the 6-week ban. Maybe they prefer a 15-week ban. Maybe they want more conversation. But if they see the desperate reality of what this single sentence, which can't solve the problem, will do, and that they're really being conned and played, then we've got an opportunity. But the other correlation you're drawing with sports wagering and sports gambling and this issue is the major media in Florida. If $200 million is going to be spent in this campaign, those people are going to line up, the media is going to line up to take that money. And they will, and they want that money. So what's the chance of us getting the message of truth about this language and what it will mean for the future? You know, what's ironic, Mike, about all of this conversation is the fact that last year, 1,026,000 children in America died from abortion. That's more than died from abortion under the last year of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, we've seen that. We've seen a no less than an increase in abortion. And you had talked about Florida already kind of being a destination state, if you will, for abortion. All of the states that are around our northern border of our state are much more restrictive than is Florida right now. But you're right, my goodness, then there's just nothing to stop them. If this thing passes in November, there's nothing to stop them from giving abortions all the way up to full term.
Well, and to show you how the hysterical side of the pro-abortion movement was responding, even just last night on major news networks, they were saying the six-week ban will destroy Florida healthcare provision. There's no way that we will be able to handle this. This is the end of the world as we know it. And here's the thing. With a six-week ban, people will have to leave to go other places, and there's nowhere else to go. All the states surrounding us are banned states. We can't offload all the abortions that we're doing right now into those other states. This is a health crisis for women. It goes on and on and on. Even though, Mike, 63% of the abortions are being done by chemicals.
Right.
Okay. So you see how they will, Mike, these people are brilliant marketers and they have no commitment to the truth other than more abortion.
And apparently no conscience either, right?
Their conscience is only, they would actually tell you that they have a greater religious zeal about this than you may have about your faith. They honestly believe that abortion should be enshrined. They believe abortion is a virtue. We used to say abortion should be legal, safe, and rare. Now they believe an abortion everywhere should be celebrated as a virtue.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about this one aspect of yesterday's decision that came down from the Supreme Court. And that would be this language issue that, as you've pointed out, it's so poorly done. And from a legal standpoint, you would think, at least I would have thought, that the Supreme Court, that would be people who should be in a supreme way, understanding our Constitution, understanding the real meaning and hopefully understanding law. Why would the Florida Supreme Court approve language that is this shoddy? Why would they do that?
Because it's the safer bet politically. They don't want to be the ones that are the bad guys here. And the answer is quite simple. I forget which of the justices made the comment, but he basically said, if you're too stupid to figure it out, you're just too stupid.
Wow.
I mean, that's basically what he was saying. And so I can understand for them it was an easy decision. In other words, it's not our job to judge a stupid idea that's going to be placed on the ballot. Our only concern is, when you read it, is it understandable? Well, yeah, when you read this, it's understandable. It's lousy legal construction, but that's not their burden. That basically would go to the merits of the language. Their burden is, if you read it as as a Florida citizen, would you understand what it means? Now, for them, that's a terrible position. If they say, no, if you read it, you wouldn't understand, then basically they're calling the voters stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're not doing it that way. So they took the easy way out. I'm not surprised at all that they moved it to the ballot. I'm not surprised at all. They pretty much expected them to do it. What no one was focused on was all the other things that would suddenly, instantly fall into place based on the privacy ruling, based on the trigger, based on the 6 weeks. And now suddenly we have literally seen this amendment shoot off like a rocket in the sense of now Planned Parenthood can quickly see, and I'm sure they saw this months before this, that this is their window of opportunity to end the abortion debate in the United States and to turn Florida into the abortion trafficking center of the Southeast. And what I mean by abortion trafficking is this is where people will come to get their abortions. Now, you and I can remember when Florida was considered a pro-family state.
Yeah.
Florida will now become the abortion traffic capital of the Southeast states.
How sad is this? And you know, I'm hearing your explanation, and that does make sense, except for one further follow-up question, if I could. Would not the state Supreme Court share the same thing that our U.S. Supreme Court would share? And that would be preservation of our U.S. Constitution. The language is so obviously pointed against life. Would that not be even a consideration at all?
That's another question for the court on another day. Yes, the question is, would the practice of this amendment actually be constitutional? First off, on other provisions in the Florida Constitution, as well as the federal government. Now, probably we will not see a federal issue here with the United States Supreme Court, because this court has said that they are not going to be the final arbiter of abortion and the right to life question. That is for the people and their representatives. That could be Congress. It could be the states. In this case, they're going to let Florida settle it. That's the message. It couldn't be louder and nor clearer in Dobbs. But that doesn't mean that there won't be further review in years to come in regards to what other things does the Florida Constitution say.
You know, I think that if you talked about the marketing genius of a lot of these people, they are good marketers. They're hard workers to get all of this on. Without any question, it could be said that they've outworked the pro-life position to the degree of getting something like this on the ballot when there were efforts to get a pro-life amendment passed. And people just wouldn't get involved. They didn't get involved. And as a result, those things did not end up on the ballot. So we have this going on. It, to me, here's my question. It's almost as if this will overshadow and really remove the Dobbs case from future discussion altogether if they get this one. Wouldn't you agree?
I think they will declare the final victory, not just in Florida, but for the country. They will say that the debate is now over. If they could win with a proposal this radical, that not only it codifies Roe in a red state, but enshrines an even worse proposal, that there's really nothing they can't do in the states. And then the political structure will collapse and in essence, obey their wishes, because it will be considered a losing proposition. That's why Florida can't be lost. Now, the one thing that there is hope for in this is that we have a 60% threshold. In this regard. Now, I'm not particularly a fan of 60% thresholds, all right, in regards, that's another question on the merits. But what Florida has is what Florida has. And in this particular instance, it should play well for life, unless people are fooled into thinking that Planned Parenthood and their allies can't get 60%. Listen, they're getting their way around the country all over the place. $200 million will get you 60%. Especially when you can market to the marijuana people just as much as you can to the abortion people.
And that's going to then, like you said, both of those vices are going to play into each other and kind of help support each other on this process. So it is a convoluted issue for a fact, and they are counting on the fact that people are going to just take the easy way out. I think they did that in Ohio. And I mentioned this, I think, the last time you and I talked, and that would be about the whole thing of buyer's remorse in Ohio. I am sure that Americans in Florida, when they wake up, if this thing, oh, God have mercy, but if this thing passes, there's going to be some people who are going to say at some point, what in the world just happened?
And that, Mike, is the disadvantage of the 60% supermajority. Because if this passes, then to be able to overturn it requires a 60% vote on another constitutional amendment. This is why it can't pass. It has to be defeated.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. And in our third segment, we'll be discussing what we have to do. But that is a big point that you made, that it's always harder to get rid of something than it is to get it in the first place. And we all know right now that it feels like the skids are greased for these people to slide right in with a big home run victory. I mean, let's face it, they passed the threshold for getting the signatures to put it on the ballot. Then they passed the second threshold of getting the Supreme Court in Florida to approve the language. And now we have this thing of like, what's going to stop them and how are we going to stop them? Because you're right. If we don't stop them, turning it over in the future with especially the vague language of no law, then what law could be ever done? What turnaround could ever be taken to get rid of it?
This is why, Mike, we have to talk about how this measure can be defeated. There's been lessons learned across the country in seven other states, and those have all been defeats. And you can learn from defeats. You can fall forward and get up and be smarter the next time around. This will have to be, prayerfully, one of the most successful campaigns in the history of all of the pro-life movement in America. And this is now on our doorstep.
Wow. It's a big decision that we've all got to come to about getting involved in making this fight, because it's going to be worth our effort and worth our involvement. Dave Zanotti is with me, and I'll be back with him for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
Dave Zanotti from the Public Square is my guest today, talking about this most important decision that the Supreme Court finally ruled on. We've all been waiting for it. And as Dave mentioned, he's been waiting and just working, not just waiting, but working to help people be informed, not only in Florida, but across the country through his show. And I've listened to numerous episodes on the importance of this. And then you hoped it wouldn't happen. You hoped that there was a chance that this thing might never see the light of day. But sadly, yesterday, the state Supreme Court of Florida gave approval, and this thing is going to be on the ballot. So, Dave, let's talk about now what kind of hand have we been dealt by the dealer here, if you will, using a card game analogy. What do we have to do with our hand that's been dealt to us to see this thing fail in November?
Well, the first thing we have to do is remember, with God, all things are possible. We still serve a God of miracles today, and I do not apologize for that testimony. This is going to be like a loaves and fishes experience, Mike. None of us individually have enough resources to overcome this giant. But if we give our lunchbox to the Lord, like that little boy did in the miracle of the loaves and the fishes, God will take it. And he continually, to this very hour, will take what we give him. If we give him everything we got, he'll take it, he'll break it, he'll use it, and he'll make it for his glory. So first thing we have to do is recognize that as believers, we need to pray. We need to forgive our enemies. We need to recognize this is not a we versus them. This is not a hateful thing. This is not a condemnation thing. This is about preserving the integrity of human life for all people. And so we have to come at this and ask God to purify our hearts, purify our hands. We got to give them what we got. Secondly, there are national organizations and state-based organizations that throw a lot of elbows. Sometimes the pro-life community looks more like roller derby than it does people of faith. And not that people of faith couldn't be in roller derby, but you know what I'm saying. This has not been a church Sunday school picnic around the country. There's been a lot of competition among organizations for funding. There's been a lot of interference by national organizations coming in, dictating their will in different states. We need to repent of that stuff and recognize there is no competition here. This is about preserving and defending and protecting life. Now, the most valuable thing in this is not a $100 million check. That helps. The most valuable thing in this is 1 million people who decide they are going to share their conviction with 100 of their friends. The most powerful way to influence an election is one person telling the next person what they understand the truth to be. And there are many, many ways to do that. We can do it online. We can do it in social media. We can do it through sites like iVoters.com, which is a site that we have that is completely free, that will be profiling this issue in the state of Florida in the months to come. that anyone can use. There are other online services that are going to be helpful. There's the TooExtremeForFlorida.com site that's out now talking about this. There are many, many more sites that will come up. There are allies in the Florida Catholic Conference. There are allies in a Florida Right to Life. There are many allies, but we must help each other at every single level. And there is probably no greater potential than pastors in their pulpits and Sunday school teachers in their home groups, letting people understand the true moral position of standing for the sanctity of human life. Now, we're going to have a problem because the other side has got a lot of dust to throw up in the air. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get tricked on the binary choice. I don't want 6 weeks. Well, do you want Roe versus Wade for the rest of your life where you can never touch it again? No. Well, then what's the answer? I've got to make a choice. Yes, the answer, the smart answer is vote down the amendment. Then let's come back to the legislative process and continue to work on an abortion policy in statute that Floridians can buy into. Now, it may not be as good as a six-week ban. It may be better. We don't know. But as time changes, as technologies change, if we can keep this in the legislative process, we can expand the realm of life as we expand the consensus for life in the state of Florida. This needs to be in the legislative process. And that's why the constitutional amendment, which takes it out of that process, must be rejected. And we can work on making abortion law better. But there's a final thing, Mike, that we must come to understand. And this is a point of repentance as well. Politics alone, no matter how good the laws will be, will not end abortion in Florida. What will end abortion in Florida is when people are persuaded that motherhood is a virtue and abortion is not. When they come to understand that giving life to a child is the greatest gift, even if the circumstances weren't what one planned for, to build the networks of support to bring back the reality that human life matters, and at the same time, that personal responsibility over our sexuality is really the answer here. People don't have to get pregnant. And in the rare instances where this happens against someone's will, there are already remedies in these situations. We have to reclaim the beauty of human sexuality, the wonder of life, and the greatest gift of all, which is motherhood. We have to come back to our senses on the wonder of life. And we have to have that message everywhere we go, that there's no more beautiful sound in the world than the sound of a child's laughter. And that the decision to terminate a pregnancy doesn't go away in 3 days. It lasts a lifetime. That there are better options. We have to be more pro-life. We have to be more pro-life in the marketplace.
Now, I know that this is being expressed in the most extreme terms of we have to do this. It's not like we have a choice, and it's not like this is just an okay thing. Well, if it happens, it's not all that bad. If this happens, it is all that bad and much, much more. So you mentioned pastors. What would be the first step that pastors can take or should take in their churches, maybe as early as this coming Sunday morning? What can be done in churches to rally the believers of this state into action?
It would be very simple for pastors to begin to preach in an ordered and in a way that it's done correctly for their content and their congregation on the biblical truth of the sanctity of life. Then the biblical truth of the responsibility when the choice is in the hands of voters to decide for life, the answer should be life. Now, there's not a perfect choice on the ballot. It is now a binary choice that has been basically set up in this situation, and Planned Parenthood's going to exploit this. So pastors need to understand, we don't have to argue about whether it's 6 weeks or 15 weeks. What we need to win the argument over is that the question is, how do we protect the most lives possible, not just for the unborn child, but for women as well? These chemical abortions are not convenient when they actually happen. The pills are convenient to get. The process isn't convenient and necessarily harmless. There are problems, and this kind of situation opens up the potential for profiteering and addiction abuse. And we didn't even bring up the question of profiteering on Planned Parenthood's side. Okay, because that's a piece, and Big Pharma side, that's a piece of this equation as well. So if we're for life, let's preach about life in our pulpits, then let's preach about the responsibility of loving our neighbor. And then let's remember, 1,026,000 children died last year of abortion in America. Do we want Florida to be one of the capitals of that death machine? No, we don't.
No. I agree completely, Dave. It is going to be something that will behoove us all. For educators, you know, this is something that educators, you mentioned teachers, and I think that's something that even in our, this goes down, does it not, to our most basic of just daily water cooler conversations. We've all got to be involved. We've all got to stress the danger and the serious importance of this upcoming November election. Now, we've, you know, it's been this way all about the president election, but now there's another piece of the pie that is so important that we get involved and vote. And I'm praying that we don't have one of those years like what we've seen in other elections where people just stay home and bypass it all and think, well, if I don't do anything, it'll all be okay. It won't be.
Well, and there's, Michael, you're so right on this. There is a temptation to say, hey, look, I'm not in a position of having an abortion. I would never have an abortion. This hasn't affected me. It hasn't impacted me. It's somebody else's problem, or it's somebody else's right, and I'll just stay out of it. No, you can't stay out of it, because abortion will not stay away from you. If Florida becomes the abortion trafficking capital of the Southeast, that will impact all of us.
That's right.
Mike, here's the other thing. We need to do everything we can in this culture to preserve the sanctity of life and the preservation of our civilization. We are below population rate replacement levels in America across the board. Our country is literally shrinking. We're making ourselves extinct. If it wasn't for immigration, America would be very close to where Europe's at right now in becoming extinct. We have lost the joy of bringing life to this world. We have to take a stand for the literal gift that God gave us way back in the garden when he said, be fruitful and multiply. Go out there and live your life and be prosperous and bring new life. Every new life that's brought is a new soul that can be saved. I mean, we're here for a purpose, and it's not just self-consumption. So this involves our entire ethic and a worldview of what it means to be alive in the kingdom of God, and what it means to be alive as a citizen with responsibility. So this is an easy one. You vote no on the constitutional amendment, and then we fix this thing in a better way in the legislative process. And then Florida is spared a tremendous curse for a generation.
Yeah. I pray we are. Oh, my Lord, I pray we are. Dave, what kind of pushback or what kind of scenario do you now see for the Florida State Supreme Court after this decision? Is this just going to be a wave this week and then it will pass? What do you see happening?
Yeah, they'll get a free pass on this one because the issue will be so quickly consumed in the actual ballot fight in the election that I don't see any pushback to them whatsoever. They're comfortable in their own defenses. And you know, they've got a strong one, which basically said, we put it on the ballot because we don't think you're too stupid to figure it out.
Wow. Okay, one final question. I've got enough time for this one. What kind of role do you see the governor taking with all of this news, with the balance of time between now and November?
Well, you really asked the big question, Mike. If Ron DeSantis does not get involved in this and mobilize every resource that's possible, his political career could be basically painted with this last defeat for the rest of his career. People trust the DeSantis family. They know his heart's in the right place on this issue. He could play a tremendous role here in every single way. And I hope that he prayerfully will get involved to every level. And again, I'm not suggesting that money alone wins this, but if the governor's involved and he has tremendous resources and can help draw tremendous resources, it would be very, very helpful.
Well, I pray that all of the abilities that we have resource-wise and people who are in positions like the governor would be in that one to get involved. And that would be the same for all pastors, that we would take this as a heart. And I know that's why we've got you on today here in our efforts to draw attention to this. I'm so grateful that you made yourself available to me to have this conversation, Dave, because, you know, by God's grace, we still have radio to get the word out in this manner and to draw the right kind of weightiness to a matter that's other people are going to paint as somehow in that category of women's health that we all want to protect. And we know that's not what this is. It's not about women's health. Dave, thank you for being with me here today. Thank you for your heart and the fight that you and the team at the Public Square always put out, man. It's making a difference.
Well, thank you, Mike. And I think that by God's grace, the Shepherd can have a huge impact. The Shepherd Network and every listener can. So we're praying for you too.
Thank you. And friends, we'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.